the partner came to us and said, hey, I'll give you $1 million right now. I'm only going to take 10% of your company. So you can either, you know, sell now if it works, or you can take my money.
Imagine living your normal day and getting your car fueled up on demand. Seriously, check out LA Startup Refill Fuel and enter code WeAreLATech for $10 off. That's Refill Fuel. It's amazing. Literally, you can be anywhere and have your gas totally topped off the tank and not even have to deal with it. No more gas stations. So go to refillfuel.com. That's refillfuel.com. Code WeAreLATech for $10 off. We could not do this without the community believing in our vision together. We Are LA Tech is independently funded by you, the community. So to support We Are LA Tech, go to patreon.com/WeAreLATech. That's patreon.com/WeAreLATech.
Welcome to the We Are LA Tech podcast. My name is Casey Bombesi, UX consultant extraordinaire, and I'm guest hosting the podcast while Esprit is out getting things done. We are getting the podcast done in here today. I'm going to be interviewing
Jason Kiesel
from
founder and CEO of CitySourced.
Awesome. Jason, tell me a little bit about CitySourced, what it is, and what do you do?
So CitySourced, essentially, it's an app. And I like to best describe it as City Hall in the palm of your hand.
Awesome.
So we essentially build applications on behalf of local governments, cities and counties all over the United States. We actually have some international customers as well. But if you think about all the interactions that you would normally do at City Hall, pay a parking ticket, register your dog, your pet license, request trash services, et cetera. We do all that through an app, and we're trying to make that experience more like an Uber or Yelp experience. Because as we all know, dealing with local government is not exactly the easiest thing in the world.
Right.
We are trying to simplify that and make it much more pleasant for those to go ahead and do that.
Great. And so you're working directly with local governments. So you're actually building the apps on behalf of them.
Yeah, we actually manage the apps in the stores for them. We have a platform on which we build and allow them to add additional functionality into the kind of offering that the citizens see. But yeah, we essentially are a mobile platform, a SaaS company based here in LA.
Very cool. And how long have you guys been around?
So we launched at TechCrunch 50 in 2009.
Okay.
We did very well. We placed third. Nice. I thought we would win. We were kind of the underdog. No one really expected us to do well. When we presented on stage, it was very well received, and it was great being up there on the finalist stage and taking third place there. So
very cool. And so from there, how did what was kind of the history? How did it go? I mean, was it like instant, like, oh, we're so famous now, or you know what I mean? Or was it?
It felt like that a little bit. It was very overwhelming, actually. Just to give you a little bit of background, I created CitySourced really out of a kind of a pet project. The company that I was heading up at the time was more focused on political kind of endeavors. It was a nonprofit political social network. So it was all about discussing bills and legislations and politicians and whatnot. And I created an app to complain to my local government. You know, we had this huge database of politicians, and I said, well, why not just build an app where we can send all the stuff to them directly?
Yeah, bombard them directly.
And so I created the app, and it was a proof of concept, and I showed it to my buddy, Tyler Crowley. I don't know, he's pretty well known here in the LA tech scene. He was Jason Calacanis' right-hand man. He ran This Week in Startups for him for a while. Now does stuff over in Stockholm, Sweden. He has his own launch conference.
Cool.
But I went to high school with him.
Oh, nice.
And grade school. So I happened to see him at a Digital LA event, and I said, hey, check this out. It's my new concept app. I showed it to him, and he flipped out. He's like, oh my gosh, you got to get this into TechCrunch. And I'm like, TechCrunch is like 4 weeks away.
Right.
And I'm like, how do you expect me to get this in there? I haven't applied. And he's like, don't worry about it. Just come on down. Let me show this to Jason Calacanis tomorrow. Uh-huh. He said, put together a little video, et cetera. So I went down there. I showed it to Jason. He immediately kind of got it. what we were trying to do.
Yeah.
And he said, let's shoot an email up to Michael Arrington of TechCrunch. Uh-huh. They were partners at the time, and see what he thinks. And so I basically, you know, showed him the video, showed him the app. I did a little quick demo. He loved it. And so we got alternate status. Apparently somebody dropped out like 3 days later. And oh, wow. So we were in. So we had like 3.5 weeks to prepare for this massive conference.
Right.
Being on stage in front of like 2,000 people live. I think there were 30,000 people on the live stream watching.
Yeah.
And this was kind of in the heyday, like Mint had launched the year before. So there was a lot of buzz around.
Sure.
And I didn't really know. I was like just some stupid guy that had an app. And I was like, you know, I'm all of a sudden I've got the Britney Spears mic on and I'm on stage and the lights, and it was pretty crazy. But, you know, we launched on stage. The crowd loved it. Michael Arrington flipped over it. And kind of once we left the stage, all craziness ensued. So we were approached by Sequoia and all the major VCs. We never ended up getting a deal done with them. We kind of went the angel route.
Okay.
And raised money that way. But it was quite a crazy experience.
And what was the reason for choosing angels over VCs?
So, VCs have their own ideas. So when we went and talked to Sequoia, they liked the concept. They liked the idea, but they didn't think the market opportunity was big enough. They wanted to see us target more of the soccer moms and those with disposable income. And I talked to Roloff both over there. He's a great guy, super smart. And it just wasn't really a fit at the time.
Yeah.
And we had some angel investors immediately come on board. We raised $250 on a convertible note, and then closed $1 million from a super angel.
Nice.
A couple of years later.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, all told, I think we've taken 1.3, 1.4 in financing, but
right.
We hit profitability back in 2013. So we're
awesome. Congratulations.
We're doing pretty well now. So
yeah, that's cool. And, yeah, it's interesting, you know, when you go to VCs and VCs versus angels, you know what I mean? You have the VC is going to have a market they're trying to hit, and they're looking for something just close enough to, you know, be like, oh, I think we could tweak this, you know what I mean, with the right amount of money.
Exactly.
And I think it's important to maybe you could just speak to, you know, other startup guys of basically saying like, you know, how did you make the decision to not compromise?
So it's actually interesting that our road to financing was an interesting one. We actually had a buyout offer early on in 2010, that spurned a partner of ours to look at us and say, hey, do you want to sell? Is this right for you? And it was, you know, for where we were at the time, I think we only had about $250,000 in total revenue at the time.
Yeah.
It was a pretty sweet deal. I mean, we're talking like a 10, 12X multiple on revenue. So it was very nice. Actually, it might even be more than that. I won't disclose the actual asking price, but it was a lot.
Yeah.
Especially having only a year and a half, you know, under the belt and doing what we're doing. But the partner came to us and said, hey, I'll give you $1 million right now. I'm only going to take 10% of your company. So you can either, you know, sell now if it works, or you can take my money.
Yeah.
And we kind of went back, thought about things, and we decided that we were going to take the investors' money, mainly because we did see the opportunity for growth ourselves. The VCs, whenever you talk to them, it's always about, it's a bit classic, but you kind of hear it all the time, and it's, well, you're not the $1 billion idea.
Right.
And that's essentially what we got. I mean, I met with probably 20 or 30 VCs, you know, Mark Suster, one of them here. It was GRP at the time. It's now Upfront, you know, super smart guy. Love what he writes about. You know, he basically said, look, you've got to get your ACV, your average contract value, up to 60,000, for us to really see this as a marketable play.
Interesting.
Because at the end of the day, VCs have, you know, they have investors, they have LPs, and they've got to hit certain numbers. And statistics don't lie. I mean, I think it's like 2 out of every 10 hit, right, on a VC, you know, portfolio. 8, you know, die on the vine. And out of those 2, 1 may be like the unicorn.
Yeah.
So out of all the investments they take, they have to be very, very careful. If you're just a 2 to 3X exit for them.
Yeah.
Like it's a win, but it's not really a win.
Yeah.
They really want somebody that's going to be that 10X player.
Exactly.
And if you're willing to go that route and have that pressure applied, then by all means, take the VC money. One of our competitors took VC money.
Yeah.
But she was replaced 6 months down the road because she wasn't doing.
Wasn't going to get to the next.
She level. Wasn't getting the revenue that they wanted. And they said, okay, well, we're going to step in and put, I think they put in a LinkedIn executive in her place.
Yeah.
So, you know, you give up a lot for the chance, but if you believe in yourself and you think you can do it, by all means, go for it.
Yeah.
You know, because, you know, 30% of 100 million is worth a lot more than 100% of nothing.
Exactly.
As somebody always says.
Yeah, right. Exactly. 100% nothing. Yeah. I think that's, it's a unique thing in the world today of, you know, making companies just to exit.
Yeah. And the investor that gave us the million, the super angel, he was very clear. He basically said, go build your business. You know, don't be beholden to anyone. He didn't take a seat on the board. He didn't do anything really. I mean, he just gave us the money and said, go, you know, you're not getting any more. So if it runs out, it runs out.
Yeah.
Go build a profitable business, build a real business and, you know, kind of be the master of your own destiny.
Yeah.
So with that, we did. And now we're doing, you know, well over 7 figures in ARR at this point. So, you know, when I think we've grown organically now to 11 full-time employees and
awesome.
Yeah, we're doing really well. So it was good advice, very sage advice. And I would say to any entrepreneurs out there, if you have the opportunity to bootstrap and it can be done, if you can fund your company with customer, you know, with customers and revenue, do it. By all means, like it's you're going to be so much better for it. It's a lot of learning involved. You know, it's a great experience. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Yeah. So. And you had a number of really, really great successes, in a row, you know, I mean, which is fantastic, of course. You know, it's the failures we learn the most from.
Mm-hmm.
What along the way have you had a couple memorable failures that you can be like, oh, this was really bad, but we got through it?
So, I mean, even with CitySource, we had hard times, right? I mean, our investor gave us the money. We had limited amount of resources. You know, to be fair, I probably made some bad management choices along the way.
Sure.
Hiring up and paying large salaries before we were ready to.
Uh-huh.
You know, and with any startup, you know, you don't want the cost to outrun the inflows, the outflows and the inflows, right? I mean, kind of bottom line it. Mark Schuster once said at an event I was attending, he said, every company fails for this very same reason. They all run out of money.
Right.
Right. I mean, that's
where they go IPO.
Yeah, I mean, but even the IPOs, you know, when they go bankrupt,
exactly,
they run out of money at the end of the
day. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. And that's what happens. So if you're very careful about managing your cash flow, which I was and wasn't, I mean, we did all right, but there was a time where we had to cut the workforce down to a skeleton crew to keep it going. And we did. And once we kind of pushed through that, the pain of having to do that, you know, the business really started to grow and take off.
Yeah.
So,
that's a great example of making the hard decisions to keep the business going. You know what I mean? Trimming the fat, you know what I mean? And obviously, you know, that's a sort of a harsh term because those are people, employees with families and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, making those, and I said, that's what makes it so hard is being able to know when you have to trim some things to keep it lean, to keep it moving forward. And I encourage every, you know, entrepreneur to, like you said, keep the startup, the bootstrap mentality as long as possible. If you can get all the way to break even or profitable, you know what I mean? By bootstrapping, that's going to be far better than just starting in a hole and trying to dig yourself out over the,
and we got lucky. I mean, there was a time, it was around 2011 where, we were kind of doing our thing and we had a customer through that angel investor, kind of drop into our laps, and we were able to, you know, it was a $300,000 deal.
Yeah.
So we were able to kind of essentially use that money to fund additional development.
Yeah.
And we always like to say that it's best that development is funded by customers.
Exactly.
Right. If, you know, most folks take money to either build product or grow sales teams or what have you. We weren't in that position. So we had nothing else to do but rely on customers to fund our development. And, you know, we had some big wins. So that certainly helped along the way.
Yeah. And so after you guys got the tech crunch, did government start kind of contacting you? Did you go to governments? That's kind of a pretty lengthy process too, to get government approval, depending on who you know, maybe, I guess.
It depends. I mean, it's actually, that was actually a lot of the pushback that we got from institutional money, right? Mm-hmm. The VCs would say, well, your sales cycle is going to be so long. In actuality, the sales cycle isn't that long. It's on average 4 to 6 months.
Okay.
But we've had deals close in 3 weeks.
Sure.
So it really depends on who the buyer is. It depends on the department that's buying. We typically go through Public Works.
Uh-huh.
So Public Works handles, like, you know, street sweeping, and, you know,
statues,
you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's interesting. They call it all street furniture.
Really?
Yeah. So, like, fire hydrants and park benches, it's all street furniture.
Like they got a Sim City. Or
yeah, totally. So it depends on your buyer. I mean, you get, you know, as far as the procurement cycle, it can be around 6 months, but there are sometimes city statutes mm-hmm. that have a threshold. So if X contract is over 10,000, it must be approved by council.
Yeah.
So you got to work through those challenges. There's budgeting cycles that you got to be aware of.
Right.
Most governments have a budgeting cycle that ends in June, starts in July.
Yeah.
So, ironically, Florida has a lot of cities that end, Q3. So their budgeting cycle starts, I believe October 1st. So, you know, there's some odd things you kind of learn along the way, but sales cycle was definitely something we got pushback on. Turns out they were wrong.
That's good to know.
I think the sales cycle is long if you're selling a $2 million product.
Sure.
Right? Like an SAP, you know, ERP system or a, you know, huge Microsoft Dynamics implementation where costs can go, you know, easily into seven figures.
Yeah.
There you're going to look at, you know, 18 to 24 months procurement. But with a product like ours, where our purchase price is, you know, anywhere from 10,000 to 50 to 60,000.
Yeah.
You know, you can get it down pretty quickly.
Yeah. And how do you go about, I mean, the governments usually are posting, you know, RFPs, requests for proposals out on the website.
We prefer not to do RFPs.
Yeah. So you go to the government and say, hey, this is what we can do for you.
Yeah. We go direct. We have an in-house sales team that we've built up over the years, and it's essentially just like any other SaaS business where you're selling to enterprise.
Yeah.
You know, you identify the key stakeholders and the key buyers and you know, target them via email and calls and, you know, sell your solution, sell the value and what you bring to their organization.
Yeah. So, do you have any favorites?
Any favorite customers or favorite?
Results. From customers?
Well, I mean, as far as some big customers that we have, Honolulu is a big customer.
Yeah, so you had to do a lot of travel there, sure.
It's funny.
A lot of on-site visits.
We're very big in the Caribbean, ironically. We have the island of Bermuda,
also
the island of the Bahamas, Trinidad and Tobago. We're all customers. So
cool.
We may have to do a City Source retreat
down
there and
make sure everything's working.
That's right.
Yeah.
Go on site and make sure everything's kosher.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Very cool. Were you born and raised in LA?
I was born and raised in San Diego.
Oh, really?
Okay. Actually, Escondido, which is North San Diego County.
Yep.
So I came up to LA in 1992.
Okay.
Entering my freshman year of college at UCLA.
Okay.
I've been here 20 some odd years. So
okay.
I've been in LA. I consider LA my home.
Sure.
Yeah.
And where in LA is City Source?
We're in West LA. So we're right where Sawtelle meets Santa Monica Boulevard.
Oh, perfect. I know exactly where that is. Why did you choose LA?
I chose LA because I essentially lived here after college.
Uh-huh.
Post-college, I got into the tech business. So I was basically 96, 97, pre-dot-com bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And it really started, my degree is actually in psychobiology.
Okay.
So I have a a bachelor of science in essentially a core science field. But after college, I wanted to wait. I was pre-med, so I wanted to wait to get it, you know, apply to medical school. I didn't want to jump right into it. I knew it was going to be, you know, 7-8 years more schooling. And I'm like, oh, I need a break here. You know,
yeah.
I'm sick of school.
Right.
So during that year, I essentially built out websites for folks.
Okay.
And that essentially just ballooned. And I essentially just became a consultant.
Yeah.
Doing web development early on, and then eventually migrating to back end.
Nice. So,
and through all that, I got a gig at MySpace, worked there for 3 years in their heyday.
Nice.
That was awesome. That was an incredible experience seeing them grow from, I think they, when I joined, they were basically 35 million users, uh-huh. and they were adding 10 million users per month.
Wow.
And it was just like they'd have a party every time they hit 10 million new users.
Another 10 million.
And then they'd have parties too much, like too often. And so Tom was like, I think we need to scale it back, the parties. So
yeah,
we'll only have them every 50 million.
Yeah. They-
it was fun, though. I was back when they were still over on, I think, Broadway or Ocean.
Uh-huh.
They butted up against Third Street Promenade over here in Santa Monica. So that was nice. You walk downstairs and you're like in the promenade. So you
can- That's fun.
You get lunch anywhere. It's, you know, good little scene.
Yeah. So what do you guys see for growth for the company? What's kind of your plan for the next 5-10 years?
So it's an interesting question. For a long time, we've been a single use app, primarily centered in the public works space around service requests. I don't know if you're familiar with 311.
Yep.
So around 90 cities in the United States have 311. It's basically you dial it on your phone. And you can get anything answered by the city.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with those services is that they're very costly. So it was pioneered by New York, and they actually have kind of essentially the premier 311 system in the world. At least that's what the industry says. And you can call them up and say, when's the Yankee game playing? And they'll tell you. So uh-huh. like they'll literally tell you anything about what's going on in the city.
Interesting.
It's essentially 911 for non-emergency issues. So anything non-emergency related, you would call 311 and they would give you an answer. Well, it turns out call centers are expensive.
Yeah.
The software to run call centers are expensive. So we built a digital version of that that's app-based and software-based.
For New York City.
And not for New York, I wish. I think they spent $8 million on their app, ironically, which, you know, I think we were to, if you use our pricing, they would be six figures a year. So it'd be huge cost savings for them, but
yeah,
you know, maybe they'll give us a call.
Yeah.
So I guess 311 is who we primarily target now.
Uh-huh.
What we're shifting towards and what we're looking to do in the future and what we're really excited about is the notion of what I said earlier, City Hall in the palm of your hand. So instead of it being just a single use app where you report service requests through the phone, we're essentially building out a platform where you can do anything.
Yeah.
We're going to be opening it up to developers, third party apps.
Okay, cool.
And all of that stems from what we call app sprawl. So, you know, the city of LA actually has, I think, 26 or 27 departments that handle city services.
Yeah.
Many of them have their own app. So if you want to report a streetlight outage, you download the streetlights app and report it there. If you want to report something else, you download another app and report it there. We call that app sprawl. And part of what we're doing with our customers is educating them on their mobile strategy, right? You know, we think and we feel the best strategy for cities is one app to rule them all.
Cool.
Right. There should be a single point of authority for the city. It's okay to have other apps. And if you follow kind of the Facebook model of Facebook being the core, but then you've got Messenger and Moments and a couple other, you know, feature apps, as we call them. But most everyone uses the Facebook app. And that's their primary mechanism for interacting with Facebook. We believe that to be similar with cities. There will be one app. And everything you do will be done through that app. You can easily turn on and off
apps, like tiles is one of the things we call them. So if I've got an app that I want to deploy in the mobile app as a developer, I can upload that, package it up, and it gets deployed automatically. You know, something like snow removal, for instance, right? Sure. It only happens in the winter. You don't want that in there all the time. So you pull it out when needed and put it back in when needed. So moving forward, that's what we're really looking at. And that's, you know, a massive market in our opinion. You know, you basically go from, you know, one application that you're selling to the city to 3 to 4 applications that you're selling to the city. Yeah. And we are seeing it in our growth. You know, our average contract value was around 15,000 a couple of years ago. Now it's over 30.
That's great.
So, and it's, you know, we're offering more value through the platform, and that's where we see a lot of the growth happening.
Yeah. Did you do the city of LA's?
We did not.
Okay.
We have some cities in LA. We've got Glendale, Rancho Palos Verdes. You know, there's a kind of an, we have over 100 customers. So
yeah, totally. Again, list them all off the top of your head. Let me ask you this, specifically in the city of LA, what LA tech companies or talent have you come across that have really impressed you?
So I thought about this. This is, Esprit kind of gave me the heads up on this. So I was thinking about this last night. One of the guys that I've worked with a lot, he was actually our partner manager at Esri. I don't know if you guys, if you know about Esri, they're massive GIS, geospatial software company.
I majored in geography.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So you definitely know Esri.
Literally urban GIS. Yeah. That's Esri is all there is.
That's actually our investor is Jack Dangerman.
Oh, okay.
With Esri.
Awesome. Which is a great name, by the way.
Yeah.
Jack Dangerman.
That's very almost spy-like.
Yeah.
So Miles Sutherland, he was our partner manager over at Esri. He's the one that found us and introduced us to Esri and the Esri ecosystem. He has since started his own company called GroundView.
Okay.
Obviously, it's spatial related. Right. It's location based. But essentially what he does and what he's done is it all centers around essentially capturing data for a city. I don't know. You know, you think about the Google Maps car, right, with the big bulb camera thing on the top and the thing spinning around. So most data collected in a city kind of on that level is done through LiDAR, you know, laser based, 3D models that are created from this stuff.
Yeah.
Well, what Miles has been able to do is actually use a standard camera to get a lot of that information out. So he can essentially strap a camera to the top of a car, drive it down every single street, and capture just as much data as these, you know, multi-million-dollar
devices
can.
Yeah.
And it's super accurate. I think he told me it's accurate within 10 centimeters.
Wow.
As far as like, as he drives down shooting camera, like shooting photos, if there's a street light in one of the photos and they tag it, they get the XY coordinate of that street light to within about 10 centimeters.
Wow. Accuracy. That's crazy.
It's unbelievably insane. And he's doing it all from photos.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's called GroundView.
GroundView.
Yeah.
So that's a company. If you have one ask of the community, the LA tech community,
wow,
what is it that you would ask them?
One of the things we struggle with the most is hiring,
okay,
right? You know, finding talent. A lot of our talent is not in LA, simply because we can't, you know, either pay scales are different or, availability is different. But hiring is a big problem for us. So I don't know if there's anyone out there trying to solve that problem, but finding essentially vetted talent within a certain price range. No recruiters, please. I'm not a big person about recruiting. I get hit up by them on LinkedIn all the time. But if somebody could solve that problem, I would definitely pay for that. You know, and there's like ZipRecruiter and Workable and all these to help you manage the hiring process. But there may not be a solution for this, but it is so difficult to essentially look at a resume and determine whether or not like this person is a good fit, right? Mm-hmm. It really needs to be a referral based, like I'm going to call my buddy over at Scopely, Anker, their CTO, and say, hey, we're looking for this kind of a guy. Do you know anyone?
Yeah.
And he's going to give me a reco and I'm going to follow up. And that's probably who I'm going to hire if they're available.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, LA Tech world, if you're out there, somebody develop a solution that solves that problem.
Yeah.
We'd love to talk to you. Heck, we'd even pay for it. So,
yeah. Which I think is a big deal too.
Yeah.
This the whole,
I think, hiring. I mean, I think every company in LA struggles with it, right? You're trying to, you know, find talent. You know, some people don't want to be full-time employees. They want to be contractors. And
right.
That's fine. You know, that's a lifestyle. I did that lifestyle for a long time. It served me very well.
Yeah.
But I think we're a pretty cool place to work for, you know?
Yeah.
We've got ping pong.
Right. What more do you need, right?
Snacks, Coke, Red Bull.
There you go. There you go. I have one more question as we close here. What is the solution for the DMV?
Oh, my, so that's a state issue.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And
are you going to do state sourced? Is that the next level up?
So, yeah, we're actually talking to a lot of states, and you know, we have a hire that actually a VP of business development that's all he does is kind of go after high level deals, partners, et cetera. So, there are a lot of problems to be solved in government, in what we call GovTech. That's essentially the space we're in. It's called GovTech,
right?
You think about the inefficiencies that are in government, DMV being one of them. There are definitely some solutions out there that could be built. None of them exist, but they could be built.
Yeah.
You know, why do I need to carry around a physical ID?
Yeah.
When I carry my phone around on me all the time.
Yeah.
Right? You think about your driver's license. You think about your, you know, I'm going fishing up in Montana next week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to get a fishing license.
Right.
Why can't I just have that delivered on my phone into my Apple wallet and show the ranger when he comes by and says, hey, you know, you guys got papers and man, here it is.
Exactly.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, market opportunity. So all the VCs out there that said there wasn't any market opportunity, they're dead wrong.
Right.
You know? Local governments spend $60 billion a year on IT. 60 billion. With a B, that's billion.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of opportunity. Not all that is straight up software.
Yeah.
But that's a massive opportunity in anyone's mind. So
plenty of room to grow.
Exactly. Exactly. So we've got some feelers out on the state level for stuff. I wish I did have a solution for the DMV. That would be very nice.
Right. Yeah. Awesome. Jason, well, thanks for coming in and talking to us about City Sourced. Wish you all the best.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We Are LA Tech is independently funded by the community. We couldn't make this happen without your support. If you too want to contribute to We Are LA Tech and see us making the podcast, building the mobile apps, creating the events year after year, consider contributing at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/We Are LA Tech. Thank you. We appreciate you.